Evet.
Thank you all for coming. We'll probably wait a couple of minutes. We need one more for quorum. If not, we will start and go on some of the informational items. We can start a little late. Johnny, welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll call the meeting in order, and we'll have a roll call. Who's going to be roll call?
Okay. Oh, Alina Banafuya Indian. City of Life. City of Coachella. Desert Healthcare District.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
Yes.
City of Indian Well.
Present.
City of India. City of Mojita.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Yes.
City of Palm Springs. City of Rancho Mirage.
Yes.
Riverside County.
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Coahuila Indians. Chair, we have one.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to public comment on agenda items. Is there anyone that wishes to speak at this time? Erin, do we have anyone else that wishes to speak?
Is it John Lewis?
Okay, thank you. We'll move on. We'll move on to chair and committee and feedback announcements. Any, I have no comments at this time. Just to welcome everybody here, and it's kind of good to see everybody in person again. So we hope everybody is doing well, and we look forward to future meetings as well. The committee, any committee members have any comments? Okay, thanks, Tom. Always has something to say.
I speak when I'm on camp.
Please, you got the memo.
Here, I will make just a couple brief announcements just so everybody is aware. First of all, welcome. For some of you, this is your first time in CBAG's conference room here, so welcome to 119. With us, in order to facilitate the remote viewing for the City of Life and participation, we are using these OWL cameras here in the center of the room. And they are turning as you speak to capture the video so City of Life can see you. And we're also using that to record our meetings. I just want to make you aware of that. And welcome.
Thank you, Erica. Okay, we'll move on to the consent calendar. Anybody wish to pull anything for discussion? If not, I'll accept the motion to consent.
Do you want to move?
Motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Okay.
Sure. Just for the audio record, you want to ask Blake?
Oh, we'll ask Blake. That's right. We have to ask Blake. Johnny, all in favor?
Aye.
Perfect. We'll be able to stuff. Okay, we'll move on to discussion and action items. Item 6A is the update on the revenue stream feasibility study for affordable housing and associated transportation. It's back to us again.
Sure. Good morning, I'm the chair, members of the committee. So I'm going to provide a little bit of historical context before I hand it over to our consultant, Dodega Osmond, to provide the meat of the presentation. But CBAG is using a regional early action planning and monies provided by the state of California to look into sustainable revenue sources for affordable housing and related infrastructure. We presented, we've entered into a contract with Cosma Consulting to conduct this revenue study. And as part of the study, they're conducting an evaluation of existing revenue sources, a quantification of the most promising revenue sources, and also looking at some of the potential policy initiatives that we can implement to spur affordable housing development in the Valley. We've been presenting updates as we've gone through this process, the first in April 2022, the second in September 2022, and we are bringing before you kind of the culmination of all that research in our draft regional strategic plan. Part of this project is also from, focused on community and stakeholder engagement through community meetings. We had our first community meeting in June 2022 to introduce the project, follow-up community meeting in October 2022 to discuss some of our findings. We'll be having our final community meeting May 3rd, which is a Wednesday. And we'll be sending out email notifications to city staff and other stakeholders who we've been contacted. So without stealing too much of Joe's thunder, I'd like to introduce Joe Diegas of COGMA to present the draft review plan.
Okay, and before you get started, I'd just like to note for the record that Councilmember Carnival has joined us from the previous city.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. Good morning, Chair, and committee, Peter. Again, I'm Joe Diegas of the COGMA company, privileged to be working for our CMAC for this engagement. What we drafted for our comments today is a so-called regional strategic plan. It's intended to be at its base level, a menu of tools available to CBAG member agencies that implement long-term sustainable funding for housing and infrastructure. More than just a menu, though, our goal is to make it useful for you all, is to actually suggest the actual combination of the items on the menu in a way that support each other, leverage each other. And so I'll walk through the main components of this plan. Primarily is the ongoing sustainable revenue source, meant to be the source of continuity of funding. I'll talk a little bit more specifically about what that is. That's really at the core of this plan. Secondarily, we spend a good amount of time in this plan talking about one-time or sort of opportunistic revenue sources, things like grants or monetization of publicly owned assets that allow sort of additional funding into a pot for things like housing and related infrastructure. We spend a good amount of time on supportive policies, housing and transportation policy sets. The idea that policy on their own may be very well and good as a means to reduce barriers of entry for housing production and other forms of development, but a lot of the value that we take at is talking about how those policies support these other blocks in the plan, the ongoing sustainable revenues and one-time sources. And then lastly, as you go through this plan, talk about the implementation tool. How do you actually get to the units? How do you deliver this funding package with these policies that we're talking about to get to actual housing production and development of the related infrastructure? So together, you know, not just the menu, but sort of a suggested organization, the various components, that's what comprises the so-called regional strategic plan. We've not been working in a silo, very importantly, actually prior to our firm and our team, fortunately, the engagement CMAC, we were privileged to take part in a meeting of this committee, which was November, December of 21, and we've been considering moving forward. And even at that point, it was very helpful context for us to hear what's even acceptable, what's palatable, what's tolerable to even hear about. So that was good context for us walking in. Started in earnest January of 22 to start assembling the basic pieces, the things that we thought would be worth looking into for CMAC's agencies, and it was in April that we were before this committee for the first time with sort of that initial draft. But these are the pieces we're thinking about trying to put together in this plan. We shortly thereafter had our first community meeting, and I would be remiss without talking about an important team member who's not present today, Ariana Associates, who's been helping us, our team with outreach. So community meeting number one in a virtual format was in June, where we had many of the staff from your respective agencies, the community stakeholders in the room to hear much of what this committee heard in April to hear. Are we off base here? Are we talking about tools that you're actually interested in, that you think are actually workable, feasible? And we fortunately had some good feedback. We came back to this committee in September of 22 with a little bit more meat on the bone. We actually had a chance to print the number of how many dollars we were actually talking about with these so-called sustainable funding mechanisms. What are the individual grants that we're talking about? Initial thoughts on how these could potentially start to come together in an implementable plan. And then later in the fall, including October, we had our second community meeting, which again was virtual, again, including members of staff, of your respective agencies, and other community stakeholders, to do that same thing. To vet further in a more progressive fashion. You've heard the ingredients, now here's some numbers, a little bit of how the plan is starting to come together. A lot of great input for our team, good questions for our clients and our work. Then throughout the end of the fall, winter, really leading up to about a month ago, we spent a lot of time meeting with the individual agencies within CMAC. So many folks had expressed interest as we had asked them, you know, at our various community meetings, let us know if you have with your specific jurisdiction, a deeper dive if you're interested. We'd love to know more about areas and their specific jurisdiction where this could work, if it works at all, or specific potential developments or infrastructure improvements might you consider the use of this tool, so that we were sort of ground truthing as well, not just making things up on our own without actually talking to the folks in your agencies who might actually implement these tools. So we've done a lot of time with individual jurisdictions. Here we are. This is our call for the spring. We are meeting with you all today to kind of much further progress. We actually have a draft of this so-called regional strategic plan. It's appended to this agenda. Long report. Very pleased if you all read it. It's not the expectation. Great. I love it if you do. The part of the use is, honestly, if someone's interested, we want them to have everything there for them. It is, well, how could it work? What are the details? If you're interested to deliver you value as consultants, we have to give you that knowledge so you could move forward if you actually decide to move forward. That's the purpose of it. And then, as Peter mentioned, we'll be back to the community in May 3rd in a virtual format to do something like today, but very important to incorporate any of your feedback questions today. And already we'll be back in front of the executive video feedback in June, or finalized for the end of June 2023. So the ongoing sustainable revenue that we keep hinting at, again, this was a key part of the feedback that we received even before we were hired in December 22, when we were considering this contract. We were hearing what might work, what might not work. And it was very clear that the idea of adding brand new taxes and adding a bunch of new fees wasn't the most tolerable approach. And so that was important feedback for us to have very early on. We started spending a lot of time in this, well, what's not a new tax, but what can actually generate sustainable revenues? Because we ended up honing in on some form of tax increment financing. All of that is obvious. I just want to reiterate what this is. Not a new tax. This is the idea. Some of you may be familiar with the old redevelopment agencies. It's similar in some sense. You draw a boundary, you could have drawn a brick for each jurisdiction. And with just within that boundary, as a set of property values increase over time, from new development or rehabilitation of any utilized properties, this will allow your agency, potentially other agencies like the county, to just put aside some portion of future property tax within that boundary into a separate bucket, into a separate fund, with a dedication for infrastructure and affordable housing. We often use the retirement analogy, where it's, you know, adding new tax, you're setting aside a piece of your future property tax revenue. I use that analogy because, you know, our firm works for cities and counties, also private sector, cities and counties. And if we think this thing is going to be palatable to any city to do this thing at all, it's going to be a positive ROI. And so with that retirement account analogy for cities, oftentimes is, can I get a match? A big part of the pitch of doing these at all is, can I get someone to match whatever I'm willing to allocate, if I'm willing to do it all? And oftentimes the county is the audience for that potential match. And so a lot of the value add for cities looking at this is, yes, could they bring in a match from someone like the county of Riverside if they wanted to end it something like this? We did crunch some numbers for each jurisdiction. You may have heard from us back in September what a lot of those scenarios were. If you look at different ways to craft boundaries within your respective jurisdictions, and then within each boundary alternative, anywhere between 5% of your city or 25% of your city, just within that boundary, you can allocate 5%, 10%, 25%, 50% of the future property tax within that boundary into a special purpose fund. Because when we looked at all those scenarios, we came up with a range of between approximately $137 million and $343 million of present value funding capacity. The economist view was talking present value. So present value for funding affordable housing infrastructure projects. And that's for us to look through the slide, that is to be ongoing sustainable. Not meant, I mean, it seems like a lot of money, but folks who are involved in housing production, it's not going to solve all problems, clearly. This is meant to be an ongoing source of continuity. It is very much the plan, because in this regional strategic plan, they incorporate the one-time opportunity to work with. So anything that we're talking about, you know, grants, monetization of access, would be in addition to this, created for this. As for those implementation goals, even to that, there are a variety of tools that we think agencies should be considering. Community land trusts as one source is this vehicle, particularly nonprofit agencies that are in charge of developing and managing affordable housing, they will control land and and manage the improvements upon that land on a subsidized basis, keep housing affordable over the long term. There are various forms of regional housing trust funds across the state, nationwide, elsewhere. They work in a variety of different ways, providing acquisition funding or gap financing for specific projects. A lot of the pitch for trust funds, the ability to leverage other funds, such as private sector or philanthropic contributions. Our plan goes a step further. We hope not overreaching in encouraging member agencies of CVAC to consider utilizing some existing infrastructure within your region to authorize Brazil about housing pilot fund. The idea that there is an established mechanism in town, so to speak, that includes infrastructure of pipeline of projects that need funding, philanthropic sources, private sector sources, infrastructure that this plan can actually feed into. And if agencies want to do this at all, this is the regional decision. That does go as far as it is. Consider not reinventing the wheel. Consider using this really regional asset that exists today as a means to actually get funding to projects and build units. So, this is probably obvious. Okay. This is trying to summarize whatever 100 pages of the original strategic plan in one graph is. I would like to walk through this, the pointer, the number below on the screen. So I'm going to talk through starting from the top. The very top are the CVAC member agencies, reviewing the potential plan, deciding, well, I'm going to do this at all. Look at this, look like if I can get engaged. So, the primary data bank in the middle is the idea that, yes, the community may be willing to do something like a dedicated ongoing sustainable revenue source in the form of passing income financing for an enhanced infrastructure financing district as a type of passing income financing. So those enhanced infrastructure financing district are called the EIFDs, just the most popular type of passing income financing. So if some portion of funds are deposited in that fund, the idea within the original strategic plan is those funds would be available for three types of projects. Kind of the three on the bottom there, and the immediately to the left, the high priority local funds. Let me just use for clemency. The idea is if you're going to have an EIFP, we think any agency is willing to do it all, they're going to want priority for their own very specific projects. What is the paramount importance to my specific agency in terms of infrastructure and affordable housing? No confusion on part of our consulting team. It's got to work for that agency first before they consider anything on a more regional basis. That's probably going to be the vast majority of the funds, call it 90 or 95% of any funds within that EIFP fund is going to be what we'll call it local choice projects. That sort of free graphic to the bottom is where we think the regional approaches. We think there's this common thread that can be strung between the various EIFPs for each agency, which can be utilized in something like a catalyst fund, a fund that has sort of flexibility, target projects strategically across the region, perhaps on a priority basis, on an urgency basis, on a need basis, and implement with the existing infrastructure of something like the Atlas Fund, very capable of leveraging other sources. What's the benefit of doing that at all? Yeah, except from our pitch here, our consulting team trying to do something of regional benefit. What is the benefit for a specific agency in considering doing this? In Cosmos experience, working for cities and counties across the state, if you're going to get a match, that's sort of an employer match, your contribution to your retirement account, in that analogy, you've got to have something of regional benefit. So for a specific city, what's in it for you? We think if you want to achieve a match from another agency like a county, your best shot is to do something of regional significance, which is what we think this regional trust fund approach offers. So it's attracting more dollars for your city, as an example, than what would otherwise be seen in your city because you're willing to dedicate some portion of your revenues to this region. And it's forgive me for volunteering this, it's not just sort of a theory, it's what we've actually seen work well in the 22 districts that have been formed across the state. It's demonstrated that that's what it takes to get multiple agencies working together in the EIFP world. And this is the passing from financing world. So what are all these other graphics on the page? How is the speaking to how those other blocks in that block diagram I showed earlier play into it? Just spend a moment on it. The money that on the far right, those are the opportunities for funding sources I talked about, grants, monetization of publicly owned land, whether it's sale or ground lease, is the idea that that feeds into the pot. You can't predict it. You never know if you're going to win a grant, so we can't call it a sustainable ongoing revenue stream, but we think it makes complete sense to pursue those. With or without these other tools, it makes sense. But we know that doing something like an EIFP explicitly increases an agency's priority for grant funds. Look at all of your HCD housing community development grants, and the infrastructure grants, affordable housing, sustainable community grants, writing the grant scoring rubric. If you're doing these things, including EIFP, you're getting more points. Very competitive, very well-funded grant programs. Why do you think it makes sense? Over to the left is sort of balance diagram is the supportive housing, supportive policies, things like prototype housing plans, the missing middle housing, one-stop shop permitting, policy that makes sense on their own, and if you're already doing these things, which I don't think I even will credit the jurisdictions that are doing these things already. But they make sense on their own. My opinion is that it works well with these other blocks in the diagram, these other graphics here. When you look at the state's pro housing designation program, which is what your communities are doing, they explicitly list things like if your community is doing an EIFP, that point on your application for pro housing designation, if you are working with a regional council of your housing fund, add more points on your pro housing designation application. So this thing has enough arrows, but the reality is there could be more arrows because there are various ways that these blocks interact with each other and support each other. And then you just could imagine as a private sector or nonprofit developer coming in and there's funding available for your project through a flexible gap financing program like the Catalyst Fund. It only improves your economic feasibility. There's also certainty in the timing of your permit, as an example of one policy. So it's additive, it's creative. These things come together to support affordable housing infrastructure in a variety of different ways. This is my attempt at some meaning to this graphic. But of course, I'm very happy to address questions on it. So we're going to go from here. Most importantly, you understand it for the first time, probably all of you, most of you are seeing it. These pieces assembled in this way, maybe you recall the pieces individually being discussed in prior meetings, but this is the first time we're putting all together for your consideration. If you'd like the feedback, be very important to want to direct your questions. Very technical subject matter. Again, repeating, our goal is most importantly to incorporate what we hear from you today and take it to the community. We're going to separate from our email outreach. We're going to be back in touch with a lot of the individuals or efficient staff that we have been meeting with over the past 4 months to make sure they're present to hear, again, what this committee said, any further thoughts that have been hashed out with the goal and our packing the board of this committee to be in June. Still a draft plan. Please, still a draft plan. We want to hear feedback. We want to revise if that's your desire before it gets finalized in June. So thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Joe, and for the newer members on the committee and maybe some sitting in. A lot of information to digest. I'm sure that they're going to want to take it back to the staff and get their input as well, too. So we're looking forward to that. Are there any questions either from Blythe or from the committee or Joe at this point? Kathleen.
A heads up and a question. Ordinarily, TESR starts with a presumption that regional collaboration is a good thing. That said, my brief conversations with staff yesterday about this item set off some alarms because we do have substantial land yet to be developed. And the anticipation is that any increased tax revenue, even our share of property tax is tiny, is going to be needed to furnish appropriate public safety for those extra residents. We are certainly interested in funding streams for affordable housing. We have entitled more affordable housing than we have funded But from Palm Desert's perspective, it is going to be very, very key to prove up key items that you have spoken about, such as 90% being prioritized for local projects and the potential to multiply dollars with the retirement analogy. So I do want to give that heads up. Staff may have been previously notified about opportunities for input, but you have your attention now. So you'll be getting more input. The question I have is this. In seeking funding from state sources for some of our entitled projects, the projects have rated low on some of the tiebreakers, including transportation, because we are so geographically dispersed. We have trouble competing with more dense environments with higher frequency of service. Now, things are improving on that front because of Sunline's on-demand rides. The Sunrise system is a huge game changer on that factor. What Sunline currently has is supported by grant dollars. So my question is just to enhance the capacity of our projects to score well for state funding. Did you look at all at channeling some funds to further embellish that rides on demand service?
Thank you. Chair, would you appropriate?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I apologize for our response to the question, and I think it's very important to acknowledge understanding of the heads up. On the question, absolutely. I apologize if I'm highlighting the word housing too much. SCAG is a lead on these sort of regional early action plans, housing or community development, housing or program. But ground material, we are trying to focus transportation as well. And even ACD, housing development, is keeping transportation in conversation. So we've heard a little bit from some of my representatives, specifically in one of our community workshops. We think it has to be. A lot of the benefit to our team from having the individual jurisdictional outreach is to hear someone not for us to tell any jurisdiction what ought to be prioritized, but to hear from the jurisdiction what it should be prioritized through the use of the funds. And transportation infrastructure has been coming up. We would absolutely encourage, again, any agency that's even willing to go down this path. Yeah, put transportation in your priority list of things to be funded. We're familiar the challenge that this region has had in its grant scoring, particularly category scores, related to transportation. Absolutely, that should be on the list. Housing is at the forefront. Some of the other things that have been coming up, utility infrastructure, basic water, sewer, and roads that are going to be needed to fund not only in Alberta to support housing, but also other forms of development. Absolutely, other forms of transportation. So, part of our written feedback from this briefing here today will absolutely be to, make sure that sort of Sunline on demand support should be on the list because that's what we're hearing after we're being done.
Thank you. I forgot to mention that Councilman Berman has arrived as well too, so we know for the right.
If you did notice.
I also wanted to actively acknowledge the first comment about the heads up. We're very happy to prepare studies. Our program Cosmos are where we truly live and we think deliver value in the implementation. We don't know, no agency here is going to implement it based on a positive value proposition, a positive return on investment for the general fund. I'll just point out that for the actual implementation of EIFD, it's required, not only is it a good idea, but it's required that you do this sort of general fund net fiscal impact. which requires each agency to look individually at what am I going to be generating? Whatever new development in terms of new revenues, great. But then you're saying, you're asking to allocate some piece of that revenue into this pot, which is, I think, the key point being modified staff. They're needed funds, otherwise unrestricted development dollars. So you net that out. And then very importantly, we're required to net out what are the cost of services that we're going to be provided to whatever new development comes into town, both the safety, maintenance of roads, pension obligations, all these other things. So on a net-net basis, what's that number? Because this, we don't want it to just be neutral, we don't want it to be negative. We don't want it to just be neutral, we want it to have a positive value proposition. So the district that we work on had actually implemented, not just evaluated, but implemented. That needs to be the case. Otherwise, there's really nothing to talk about. So I just truly acknowledge that I hear it and absolutely think that it needs to be a part of it. The populace in any agency considering what you want.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions from Blight? We'll move on to Blight and then we'll.
No questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Indian Wells were involved in this. How does this affect us if we already have EIFD? You know, we're in the process of doing that right now in Indian Wells. So if it's already implemented, then how would we be able to be involved, or would we have to not?
Yeah, thank you. We were privileged to work, almost privileged to work separate from the CBA engagement for the greater community. And this game on EIP evaluation. Crunched a lot of numbers. It was great. Approached the accounting for partnership. Well, this is all page state things. Okay, this is nothing super sensitive. What ended up happening was the demonstration to the county of the regional benefit that, at least at that time, this was months ago, that wasn't sort of clear to the county of the regional benefit. And so the city could decide to do the EIP on its own or perhaps have a recraft and pursue something regional that could get that match. What I've only talked about informally with your city manager is this could be that. Could be. I don't know if that's not obviously our thought, but the consultant say that. I think he wanted to say before I bring it to my electives, I need to see the picture to see whether this works for us, first and foremost, and then could it also work on a regional basis. That's my understanding of where things are at with your agency. But I do still want to answer your specific question. You can't put an EIFD on top of the EIFD. If you're already doing it, anyone in the room or considering this, if you're already doing it or you have one set up, you can't layer this on top. What you can do if you wanted to is do it in different areas. You're allowed to have more than one EIFD in your community if you want to get into this EIFD game at all. But you can't have more than one EIFD coming in the same parcels because the property tax dollar can only go in one place. So if you're thinking about doing this and wanting to do it just completely on your own, yeah, I think that's probably limit the applicability of what we're talking about here.
The county was not interested in working with us on our EIFD, which was disappointing, but we are in the process of doing it on our own, obviously. But it does make a lot of sense. It's really a good concept that really works, and that's why we're working on it already. But I will talk to staff about what we're doing in this current plan and see what we can do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other further comments? Thank you for this. A lot of information to process. However, I just want to share that when we're having this conversation, we also keep a DEI in mind as well in some of our communities. And also, you mentioned missing middle housing. I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that, but I really want to emphasize that we also look at modular homes or some of the kind of homes, some of the concepts that are coming through, especially in respects to coexisting with some of our utility infrastructure issues that we have going on in parts of the valley. So I think we have to keep an open mind and get away from just the single family housing concepts in some of our communities and be more open to diverse housing. And also something to keep in mind as well,
the positive impacts on our economy when we house a workforce. We use affordable housing in low-income Section 8. Sometimes that comes with a negative connotation with it, but it's workforce housing. It's our people who work in our community. And I think we have to also keep that in front of these conversations. It's the positive impact when we house our workforce in our community. So I just wanted to add that, but I thank you for your presentation as well.
Okay. Sure. I can take that on your comments, and I 100% agree. And especially the mixed product type, because we are getting too wrapped up in building the 2,500 square foot single family home. That takes 5 years to get a product up around. You know, the intent of this is because, like you brought up, Councilmember Kelly, on how we're disadvantaged on tax credits and other financing, whether that's transportation corridors and hubs or environmental impact stuff, that the entire county is disadvantaged for, is that the purpose of this study was really how do we look at other types of revenue sources. We know that the Lift Your Ride program and Catalyst Fund is highly successful already as a model for the state, but what are additional revenue sources that we can do? And this presents that opportunity. To your point, though, Raymond, is that while this is the revenue portion of the side of the story, how are we looking at the pipeline development too in those other types as well? And looking at encouraging developers to come in and build, say, modular type property development too. But what we can spur that type of development is having these type of creative revenue sources and streams that are not available in other parts of the state or regions that are disadvantaged by ours as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a big challenge to some more developers is the red tape and the time. You know, time is money, and sometimes that's an issue of how can we streamline some of these processes to coincide with our nonprofits and our developers to get these built.
Exactly. And I will give credit, and I rarely give credit to HCU, but I will give credit to HCU because they are listening to this. You know, we've built a really good relationship with HCD. They're actually, we saw the directors coming down again week after next to talk about, to your point, again, is like, how are we looking at creating streams of revenue outside of the traditional tax credit scoring system that will benefit regions like ours that are actively, aggressively dealing with building housing, just like Palm Desert, just like Coachella to Indio as well. And then instead of being penalized, how can we be incentivized and rewarded? And to your point, Wayne, too, is like encouraging developers to actually invest in this region. That's the fastest growing region in the state and will be over the next 10 to 20 years. And so at least they're listening, but I believe the reason they are listening is because we're coming up with creative ideas like the Catalyst Fund, like the pipeline that we developed throughout the county, like we're doing the studies like we're doing around not only the IFDs, but even concerning community land trusts in the region as well. So they are taking notes, and whether they take action or not, that's a whole other story, but at least the conversation.
Thank you. And Joe, a couple, anybody else? A couple of questions. I know that when I was going through the briefing with staff, and Peter, you can jump in whenever you want as well, too. As far as credit for cities, if we throw into a regional pot, which I think is a great idea, to raise money and get it going on a regional basis, how did the individual cities get credit for the MENA numbers if we're thrown into a regional pot?
I'll start with you would, and maybe you could, but there's nothing today that's in place that will let you. So I don't want to create unrealistic expectations about that. The idea is, any jurisdiction would only get credit for any affordable units developed within its jurisdiction. I don't think there's not going to be any changes to that. If it does, then that would be great.
But exactly, and I think that we have to provide incentives for that. Otherwise, there's no incentives for cities to throw money into a regional pot. We're not going to get credit for it. And I think that was one of the issues way back when we kind of went through this before. So if there's a mechanism that we can provide, or the state can provide for us to get credit for that as well, too. Now, also, are developer fees capped on this? Do we need to go out for an RFP to the various developers? How does a regional approach to that happen?
We can, Well, you can get back, we have some good ideas that other panel may have as well. So if any jurisdiction was willing to entertain this at all, we think you have a good funding source coming up very soon. It's getting you to consider getting some help to fund this work. If you want to do it at all, I will pay for other people's money. That money specifically called out doing things like trust fund if you want to do more of that activity, and then specifically funding mechanisms, managing mechanisms for SCAG through its PATH program, which isn't yet fully approved. Many people are tracking it. Expected already, hoping them imminently, but they're prioritizing this specific thing. For any community that wants to do this, they're putting more money in the pot to actually help you do it, not spend your own money. Other than that, we're not talking about the increasing fees to anyone that fund this sort of work. If that was part of the question, sorry, I misunderstood. But there are firms, by the way, not just ours, that do this. Right. Any agency wanted professional advice to actually implement.
Sure. I can add on, sure. Because it's a great question. This is where the pipeline comes in. So back to the reading number specifically too, is that anyone that seems to say about holding as well, but it's like, that's where we're identifying the pipeline about, which projects are more shot away, expanding the term all the time, than others. But I think that's where you analyze where, how, you as a specific city can commit. As far as the developer and stuff, that's really kind of outside the funding mechanism per se. So that would be more on through the pipeline or the catalyst fund on the incentives to specific developers in certain project areas. And I think Joe references too in the presentation is about another incentive on as far as cities go is land. And I know you guys have done a great job of that and the team did as well. So there's different options. I think too is that even if you're not specifically gaining your WENA numbers, we know that, you know, workers, whether it's in Indian Wells or Rancho Mirage, can't afford to live in those cities. That's where this regional approach helps, because even if you're contributing, whether that's through the EIFD program or direct allocations to the Catalyst Fund, is you're creating to a regional stabilization around housing, which to your point is workforce housing, as you mentioned as well, whether it's affordable or not. But it does create to the regional stability of housing and the entire social determinant of health. That's the basis.
Absolutely. And I think we're trying to think outside the box of proverbial box here, that we're trying to think outside and get funding, build housing, and which is what we need. And I'm sure that we're going to have a lot of input from various cities as we go forward. And I would encourage everybody to get those comments as soon as possible, go back to your staffs, give them the report and say, let's get some, questions and comments back to, Consulon so we can move forward, before the next presentation. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions that pop up as we go forward and some that we haven't even thought about yet. So, I'm sure you'll be getting a lot of those comments from our cities. But a lot of information. Peter, anything else that you want to add?
No, except Joe presented a great, overview of what we're looking at. And just to clarify, so we'll be taking all those comments back. Depending on the nature of the comments, we'll be presenting the report in draft form again to the Homelessness Committee as an important item in May, with a final approval scheduled for the community executive meetings.
Perfect. Yeah, because I know that, you know, property tax, every city has different property taxes. They have no and low, and people get more property tax because they're in the older cities. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff that pops up. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Any other questions? I'm sorry, any other questions?
You know, Chair, by my
source,
we brought one thing, and that's, of course, incentives. And there really isn't an incentive for cities and perhaps even the county to contribute some of their tax increment to some regional pot. That does feedback into our legislative platform, and we've been down this path before. And John Beeney, you remember this, right? 25 years ago. And it was associated with the city of Indian Wells, and we tried over and over again. But if this committee was interested, we could certainly add that to our legislative platform. I have no idea what the temperature is Sacramento for such approaches. In the past, there has been a lot of resistance to allowing a wealthier cities to shirk off their responsibility, even if it meant creating 10 times as much housing as anywhere else.
Exactly.
in this region, we've been pretty pragmatic about it. You'd rather have the housing wherever it is, but that has not been met very positively in Sacramento. But it's something we could explore. And Craig, I don't know if you did that.
And all the prevailing wage that we had also talked about, they add so much money on to.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. You can bring it up.
Although is that if you look at a modular project where you're building something in a factory, you do eliminate that prevailing wage thing. And I agree on it. Even 5-10 years ago, I would have said no regional allocation arena. I totally changed my thinking on that because of the way we operate. And I had really good conversations with Jan and Harnett about this. And there is talk, believe it or not, whether it goes anywhere is another question. I don't think with the current administration it would. But I think that conversation still needs to continue to happen. Because I think especially in a region like ours, also too, I've been talking with Senator McCormick out of Bakersfield and Fresno area, same issue there as well. In that kind of regional position.
Very good.
Yes, this builds on the last two comments. This jumps the gun a bit to our next action item. Councilman Furman and I are both privileged to serve on SCAG's CHD committee. He's the designated rep from this committee, and that's the policy committee upon which I serve as our Six City Regional Rep. A major agenda item for that committee is RENA reform, including such possibilities. Vegas is not giving good odds. But the issue is going to be thoroughly worked up. And within SCAG, where we will probably have the most effective chance for successful advocacy. Be assured for once.
Absolutely. I know we're well represented there. Any other comments on this topic? If not, we will move on. We do have a action item, so we need to provide input. Is there anything else that we need to do other than?
No, Chair. I think
you've gotten direction.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the robust conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter and Joe. Okay, with that, we'll move on to item 6B, which is the appointment of the regional representative of the SCAG Policy Committee.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. Thank you, Councilmember Kelly, for segueing this item. I'll piggyback on that. So, CMAC appoints members to represent the region. SCAG's regional policy committees are in three. The one that is before you are moved to the Community Economic and Human Development Committee. This committee, by the background, has oversight of rural visioning and forecasting processes, and also the regional housing needs assessment that was you were discussing during the day. SCAG reviews its appointments every 2 years. Councilman Furman was a representative was appointed in 2019. To serve as a sub-regional representative. He has also expressed interest to continue serving on that committee. And so before you today is discussion and nomination of sub-regional representative to fill the vacancy on the CEHD committee so that we can take to our executive committee meeting.
May I have the privilege of nominating Councilman Furman to continue.
There is a
motion.
There is a motion in the Senate. Anybody else willing to drive to LA? I guess not. So with that, there is a motion in the second. All in favor, we'll start with Blythe.
Aye.
Committee, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Congratulations. Okay, we'll move on to item number C, update on the navigation center in the city of Palm Springs. Greg, you're going to give this presentation.
Yeah, I am.
I think it's important to note that this committee was founded about 17 years ago now to establish a West Valley shelter. And so 17 years later, we're still waiting for the thing to happen. Many of you know, and as some of you reviewed, about that she just committed in mind for about 5 years when they discovered this property, but we had no capital money to do anything. And so about 2 years ago, when we had the home key dollars arise, and then of course through CARES Act dollars and ARPA dollars, a significant investment for the county, we secured this piece of property in the northern part of Palm Springs to build a navigation center, which is kind of the new word for shelter. But more importantly, though, it has the transitional beds and has pools of wraparound services. So I'm just here today to give a little bit of update on where we're at, kind of our current status, and kind of gave you the review of the big picture. We've had delays, like most developers, in supply chain issues, primarily around coming out the Edison and the gear switch. I know more about gear switches and electrical than I care to know about. I will say that SBE and our government affairs rep have been absolutely wonderful in expediting as much as possible, and so luckily we're back on track. We are in the final phases of plan check with the city of Palm Springs, and there has been a finalization of the RFP for the contractor, that award will actually be given next week. Extensive community engagement, worst community engagement that any project I've ever been involved with in my life. Literally, 4 community meetings, in addition to the 6 city council meetings that this was discussed at about over the last year and a half. And then we have resident advisory working groups that meet on every other month basis. So, Palm Springs has definitely got its community engagement process down. This is a repeat slide. Sorry, Erica. So just briefly over, this is what the site looks like currently. Looks like we'll be breaking ground hopefully in about a month and a half. This was an old Ford Motor Company production site that already did their commercials. So you'll be building C's actually will eventually be a shelter component. We'll design that in a kind of non-con gateway, addressing some of the concerns that we had about COVID and transmissible diseases, but more importantly, the shelter resistance aspect that many people don't want to go into a hundred setting. But for currently, the project in phase 1 is building 8, which is to the north, and then building 24. Building 24, we label it space as a 24-hour operation, so that we basically your cafeteria, case management, security, et cetera. Building B, building A, basically the 8-to-5 operations during the weekdays for support services. We'll get a little bit more into the site design here. The real key component of this and where we got the majority of funding through the state, as you'll see to the left portion on the lower side, is the 8 transitional units. The idea here is much like the CB200 program, where you take the most vulnerable off the streets or through city access center in Palm Springs and you place them into immediate housing. Housing First Works, we know that is demonstrated through not only national models, but specifically here in the Valley through the CB200 program. So you'll see the units, again, to the left will be transitional units, ideally 90 to 120 days, depending on the acuity level of the client. Some may stay longer, so we will not have a cap on those. And then they'll move into transitional units. Again, full supportive services on site, so behavioral health, workforce training, both in culinary arts, landscaping, maintenance, additional respite care beds or recuperative care or discharges from hospitals, no barriers to pets on site, and we'll actually have 5 units for families, and then we'll have 10 units for transitional age use for the 18 to 24, most of those exiting out of some of the foster care systems as well. I'm just going to go through a couple more slides here, and you can see this is building 24, so you've got basically layout of recruiter shirt up at the top, obviously, office space, and then the big part of this building is the actual cafeteria, workforce training development, down the fueling fire stage there.
And then building aid again, congressman employment services, and all the case management required, on site. And just another, design layout and pretty much what the rest of the slides are, and then landscape plan as well. There's been a lot of discussion about around landscaping is, for screening, security purposes, for, that many of you may have heard some of the concerns that were brought up at the beginning. From the community about why they're in front of the north side. We've been able to rely on those fears, pretty much, especially because most of the comments were from other extenuating circumstances, not necessarily the navigation center. Again, this is not a drop-in, drop-out facility. It is by referral basis through agencies like CEG, like CVAG, Jewish Family Services, obviously law enforcement, hospital discharges as well. And then, as I said, once we get into phase two on building C, which will be the shelter component, again, well, the shelter component, it's not like a drop-in, drop-out facility where you'll have food pantries and all that. Primarily making sure that we're respecting, the wishes of the community, but more importantly, so that it's actually really a throughput system on real treatment for individuals, experiencing homelessness and graduating. I think that's basically it. Happy to answer any questions. So we're looking, and I'm going to get to Erica, if I'm not forgetting, but, we're again looking at groundbreaking hopefully within the next month and a half. We're looking at full occupancy, outside of building C, but we're transitioning units and wraparound services by February of next year. And so, give the city a lot of credit for accelerating, planning. It's just like any other housing project. It takes longer than what it should. There's too much red tape, and those are conversations we're having with HPD with Downtown Homes. In the meantime, the county will be unveiling our time count the second week of May. We have seen somewhat of a significant increase in the city of Palm Springs. And actually the police department is outside of the regular time count and done what we call a census count. And has identified roughly a little over 300 and some odd individuals that are on the front streets of Palm Springs. So there is definitely a significant increase. We are working with the city right now. We kind of provide some funding for an emergency pop-up shelter that we're working with Martha Village Intention on that. Location to be determined on that, but ideally, hopefully having that open within the next 2 to 3 months. We'll think the face of what we've done over the last 4 or 5 years when the emergency like cooling's in over the summer. But again, a little bit more capacity that we can start doing this throughput on this fall.
Perfect. Any questions for Blythe?
One quick question.
Well, let's go to Blythe first. John, any questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, sir, no question.
If I can address to the chief, just for Johnny's sake, is that when we were at the Alpha Conference, the chief of police brought up some of the programs they're working out of the police department. So we're working with the county, looking at some funds to make sure that we can get funding for that. That's trying not to address the needs of life as well.
Very good.
Mark, thank you. You mentioned the full capacity. Is employment or staffing a concern?
Not only no, not yet. At least we were on college meeting with Marcus, and they're confident they'll get the staff. They'll start job recruitment in late September, early October of this year, so that they can have a full run to train and ramp up staff. This has been, I've been at a couple of conferences the last couple months, and workforce is becoming an issue in this realm. We're not experiencing that to the degree out here, but that doesn't say it won't be an issue. The challenges really are we're limited on admin dollars that we can spend, whether that's your HUD funding. The state is not as restrictive. What we try to do as a county is through some of our ARPA allocations and some of the state funding is increase admin dollars to our subrecipients or our CDOs, because you can actually go work at a McDonald's or an Amazon warehouse and make more money than you can as an outreach worker or case manager, and that's not good. So we are looking at how we change that. There's a lot of conversations within the state about changing the admin levels so that we can do that. We're actually speaking in part of conversations with UCR and CSU as well about some accreditation programs that we can do for our certifications so that we can justify.
Thank you.
I'd
You know, recently the state announced an audit on homelessness dollars. Any effect that this will have there on this project?
Not on this at all. We're confident, and I can say this from county level, what we've done, we recognize on a statewide basis about how we're utilizing our dollars, how we leverage our CARES Act dollars, our ARPA dollars, our HOME-E dollars, our HAP dollars, our HIP dollars, and go on and on of the number of programs we have. But we've really invested in building both the physical and human infrastructure over the last 3 to 4 years, anticipating that we wouldn't have the ongoing sustainable funding. We're all for accountability. Our 5 year strategic action plan through the county is broadly based on metrics. We have no concern at all that we would ever Now, with that being said, I think it's important to know, and you know, the governor and legislature, and I've been working with the state by advocacy on an accountability measure that legislation is being proposed around the extension of the HAP program with accountability, but also sustainable dollars, because you can't ramp up or build a system and then not know whether or not you're going to have the funding for 2 or 3 years down the line. And that's a common theme in Sacramento. Literally just up there yesterday, they gave me with legislators, and all of them know and get that. With that being said, though, too, is that it's important to know that, you know, when the governor talks about, and I give the governor a lot of credit for the investments he made, but when he talks about the $12 to $20 billion in investments in homelessness and housing, about 75 to 80% of that is housing. Well, you're not going to see the results of that for 4 to 5 years because it takes that long to build projects, and everybody in this group knows that. But if you look at the slice of dollars that counties have done around the homelessness aspect, it has produced results. But it has really shown that if we are committed as a state, and I would argue more federal assistance is definitely needed, but if we're committed to tackle this problem, it is a resource and priority issue. And if you're not going to put the money there, which CBAC has done on over the last 4 to 5 years, has committed dollars to this project or to this process and has shown positive results. So, and that's when I'm talking about Tom, on where we come to the county, because we've made those significant investments. Are we going to have an increase in our PIP anytime now? Yes. But it's going to be far less of an increase than it would have been if we wouldn't have done anything at all.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? You're right. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to our information items. Any ex officio comments? Anybody want to make? Okay. If not, we'll, for your information, we have the attendance record. We have member jurisdictions, non-region city housing first. I know everybody's getting their money in and they're coming, and landlord incentive programs. Any other questions before we move on to public comment? If not, Erica, do we have any public comments?
Chair, we do not.
Okay, great. Thank you. So our announcements, we have upcoming meetings in May for the Homeless Committee, and then the Executive Committee will be meeting on April 24th at 4:30 as well, too. So if you are
here, I do have a question.
Sure.
When we were getting our report from Cosmot, he said something about May 3rd. What is May 3rd as opposed to May 17th?
May 3rd is the third community stakeholder meeting.
Okay. All right. Not our meeting. Of course, we can attend, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, I would encourage your staff to get those comments in.
Yeah.
So we can incorporate that into the report for our next meeting. With that, we hope to see you all at the next meeting on May 17th. And I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Motion second. Well, we are adjourned.